sincere faith. He said, which was also in your mother and your grandmother, Eunice and Lois. And thinking about mothers, and it's certainly not limited to mothers, but there is such a deep, sincere faith that they have for their children. You know, some people in this world can do some bad things and nobody loves them, but there's always a mother out there that has love and faith for that child. And we just honor mothers that are here today and the faith that is passed down from generation to generation. It's more than just burying a child physically and raising it for a few years and off that child goes. There's a deep faith that's committed to that child, and a faith that in many ways, if a mother's heart, especially if a mother's heart's connected to God's heart, that faith is never lost, it's never diminished. So we bless all of you. And Joanna had a very successful surgery this week on her sinuses, and we're blessed to hear that. Yeah.
Book of Proverbs, chapter 31, which is a special meaning to me, and it's titled "The Wife of Noble Character," but I think it certainly applies to the mother of noble character as well. A wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. She selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. She is like the merchant ships bringing her food from afar. She gets up while it is still dark. She provides food for her family and portions for her servant girls. She considers a field and buys it. Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. She sees that her trading is profitable, and her lamp does not go out at night. In her hand, she holds the distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. When it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed. She is clothed in fine linen and purple. Her husband is respected at the city gate, where he takes his seat among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies the merchants with sashes. She is clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of the idleness. Her children arise and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the reward she has earned, and let her works bring her praise at the city gate. Lord,
it's been for me a very rough week. And at this point, the real good that's come out of it is about what I'm going to share with you. So the word this morning is titled "Position to Do Battle." I wish the word was titled "Joy Unspeakable." It would mean that my week has been a little bit easier to get through. But I want to talk today about battle and spiritual warfare. And that's not something I like to talk about. I think all of us try to avoid that. I know a lot of groups put a lot of focus on that, and it can easily get off into weird tangents. I think people tend to get very negative, wrapped up in all these spiritual conflicts, and groups can feel overly important because of this spiritual great battle that they're doing. And I really think it's just, we need to recognize it's a part of being alive. It's not just if you're a Christian, you're doing battle. To be a human being, to be alive, means you're involved with battle. To be in this, on this earthly plane with our human emotions and our human thinking means we're going to be conflicted. Just looking in the arena of relationships, I mean, it's just so hard. As much as we love, with all the baggage that we carry and all the conditionings and all the differences that we have in our thinking, it's very difficult to get along, and intimacy can be a very difficult process. It's kind of like dancing through a field filled with landmines. You try so carefully to do the right thing to the person you care about, but you say the wrong thing or you step on that mine, you trigger that person's hurt, a deep wound that has nothing to do with you, and it can just blow up. Well, what's wrong with this? It's just the way life is. God has created us to be human. He understands the conflict we're in. You look in the mirror, and there's another great arena of conflict and battle, isn't there? The life that we dreamed about living. Think over the years and your thoughts, the way you thought life would be and how you wanted to be in life, and the life that you really live. There's a lot of conflict we go through emotionally, mentally, over that. And there's a lot of other different arenas of conflict. So to be in battle, and you know, when we come to the Lord, people think, well, now that I'm a Christian, I should be through all this battle stuff. And maybe that's what you were told through whatever religious institution you've been a part of. Jesus Christ is abundant life, and he's given us all things that pertain to life and godliness, and that is true. But the battle certainly doesn't stop when you become a Christian, does it? Some ways it may intensify because you become aware of God's love and all that he has for you. And then you look at the way life is on this physical plane, and there's real conflict between the two, isn't there? So to be human is to be in a state of angst. But we know that in him and in the Father's love and the relationship we have with him, there is resolution. Being a believer doesn't help you to escape conflict. It helps you to overcome. Now, the approach of our own natural mind, I think, in the world is, when you look at battle, it's how to fight it. But I think more the spiritual emphasis, it's not that we don't learn how to be more effective in fighting. We learn communication skills. We learn how to reframe our thinking and think in a more positive way. There's a lot of things we learn in how to do warfare and how to battle. But the real issue for a believer is, it's not just how to, it's who we're related to and who is fighting for us. It has more to do with where we are positioned in the battle. In the world, we have, you know, one example would be all these seminars on, you know, positive thinking and dealing with different aspects of that. And they can be very effective. And a lot of times, of course, they're hooked into how to get rich. And that's how you get people there. How to be powerful. And a lot of people have gone to those seminars and become rich. What's happening? The human mind, there's certain disciplines that are introduced. And the human mind is being manipulated, or you're changing how you think about things. How to let go of certain negative ways of relating, how to take on more positive ways. And it can be effective in different arenas. Therapy's about that. Learning how to think differently can provide healing in many different areas. But the deeper conflicts that go to the core of what makes us human, I believe can only be answered in God, because we're created in his image. Those deep core issues that we do battle with, that I think all other conflicts build upon. Who are we? What's the meaning of life? Why are we here? I think it takes more than just retraining our thinking to win that war. That has to come from God himself, because he's the one that created us. So this morning, as we look at different things about battle, let's remember, I think the most important thing is, as you're facing the battles of your life, the circumstances, relationships, whatever arena you want to look at, what is your awareness as you go into battle? It's not like we can just say, well, let's say I have a conflict with my husband or wife or some other person you're close to. Okay, God, I know it's you that's got to fight this battle for me. I need you in the situation. you talk to that person, I'm going to the beach, when you get it resolved, just call me, I'll come back and everything will be fine. No, we're engaged. The battles of life, we are engaged. You're the one doing the talking. You're the one doing the crying. You're the one humbling your heart. You're the one thinking it out. But the spiritual approach is, as you're doing that, the how-to battle, there's an awareness of who you're connected with and that you have access to that unconditional love and wisdom from the Father. That's the difference. It's not just up to you and human resources and what you can do to win that battle, but it's also very deeply connected to your oneness with God and recognizing that the love of God is a very strong, the strongest force within you, and that God wants to fight for you in bringing about his victory. Two types of battle. One is the things that assault us, things that come against us. 1 Samuel chapter 17, it probably better if I just read some verses and you can read about this later. This is, of course, dealing with David and Goliath. And what was happening at the time, the Israelites and Philistines were at war with one another. Goliath was this giant that was intimidating and taunting the armies of Israel, daring anyone to come up and fight against him. And Israel was paralyzed with fear. They couldn't move. Who comes on the scene? A man named David. And you know, I think this is, let's look at these type of conflicts we get thrown into. Things come against you, Goliaths. And a lot of times they're not circumstances that are so big. It's your fear of the circumstances. It can be something relatively small, but when you mix it with fear, it becomes a giant. And you go, what am I going to do here? And a lot of battles that assault us in our mind and our emotions tend to paralyze us with fear. David comes up, and Saul said to David, let's see, he says, you are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, while he has been a warrior from his youth. And David said to Saul, your servant was tending his father's sheep when a lion or bear came and took a lamb out of the flock. I went after him and attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. When he rose up against me, I seized him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has taunted the armies of the living God. David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion, the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. Saul said to David, go and may the Lord be with you. Now, kind of a leap in logic here. I think it's pretty impressive to kill a lion and a bear. But we're talking about, what was he, Goliath, 10 feet? 9'6". That was my second guess. 9'6". You know, a little bit different. A giant that's been a warrior all his life. But see, for David, it wasn't reasoning, well, that guy's bigger than the bear, and he's been warring. He's smarter than the bear. He's been warring all his life. It's where David was positioned. To him, Goliath was no different than the lion, the bear, or a zebra, or anything else. It didn't matter. This man was coming against God and the people of God. So David looked at Goliath, and instead of being paralyzed with fear, which is what a natural mind would have done, he had a relationship with God because he said, God delivered me from the lion and the bear. He knew who was fighting for him. So it was where he was positioned, not how he fought. You remember Saul tried to put all the armor on him? Okay, David, go for it, but you better go out there with some armor. David said, this stuff doesn't fit. You know, this is not what this is all about. It's not that I, in my humanity, am greater than Goliath in his humanity. It's about I have a relationship with God, and I know God will fight for me. Therefore, if God is for me and I'm aware he's for me, I don't have to be paralyzed with fear. 1 John says what? Perfect love casts out fear. As we become more aware of our connection to God who is love, we can be delivered and are delivered from our fears. It wasn't Goliath who was the issue for Israel. It was their fear of Goliath. David didn't have the fear because he feared the Lord. He knew God was with him, that God would fight for him. So he said, I don't need this armor. This isn't a human battle. This is a spiritual conflict. Someone is taunting God and his people. He's going to come down. You read on down, and David, of course, Goliath was just appalled that this young man would come out against him with basically like a slingshot and some rocks. He's looking, going, what is this all about? David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. And of course, later he says, verse 47, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. Again, the battle is the Lord's. That's the key to what assaults us, knowing who the battle belongs to and becoming aware of that love of God. David, yeah, you know how the story unfolds? Does anybody here not know what happens? It'd be pretty bad if I said Goliath won, right? Of course, David slew him. They routed the Philistines and went on from there. But whatever's coming against you, you feel that assault. It comes against you to make you afraid. It plays on your fears. The answer is not to just try to argue with your fears. Have you ever done that? Have you tried to reason yourself out of anxiety? What happens? You can become very, very anxious about how anxious you're becoming, and it becomes bigger and bigger, doesn't it? You have to disengage. When your thoughts are very anxious and fearful, you want to get to from point A to point B, right? From that state of anxiety, that state of calm. But you've got to disengage from that battle where you're fighting with your thoughts and trying to change how you're thinking. And when you can disengage, you find that battle can be, you can be freed from that battle. What are we talking about being aware of the Lord? It's disengaging from that human conflict, trying to fight it in your own strength, recognizing that God is with you and the relationship you have with him, and then you are aware of how God fights for you. Second type of conflict, it's not just what comes against us, but it's when we are pursuing the things of God, the promises of God, the life that God has for us. When we're moving forward, the things that come up to discourage us. We're going back to Deuteronomy chapter 1. And I want to just give you a little background to this. What's happening is the spies have gone out to look at the promised land, the land that God promised his people, the Israelites, as they were wandering in the wilderness. A land flowing with what? Milk and honey. This was their inheritance. This was the promise God made to them. Unfortunately, they weren't aware there were giants in the land that had to be taken care of. So the spies come back, except for, of course, you know, Joshua and Caleb and a few that had that relationship with God. They come back discouraged, saying, there's giants there. We can't go in there. They're bigger than us. Interesting, in Numbers 13, the last verse, what was said was, we looked at these giants and we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and then we were grasshoppers in their sight. This is what happens as we're pursuing this abundant life and your dreams and what you're reaching for. Discouragement comes up. Those giants come up. They affect the self-esteem, and that's what that verse is talking about. We saw these giants, and then we looked at ourselves and said, we're nothing. And then to them, we were nothing. What was the real issue? That they looked at themselves and said, we're nothing but grasshoppers. Everybody here can relate to this. As you're moving forward, those things that come up and the discouragement that comes with it, and God, I thought you promised me all these good things in life, and all I'm doing is fighting this and fighting that, and how can these things happen? How can they be? How can my dreams come true? How can they come to pass? What's happening is you're in battle, but you're in battle within yourself. Now in Deuteronomy chapter 1, I'm going to read some verses. I'll start in verse 25. They took some of the fruit of the land in their hands and brought it down to us, and they brought it to us back a report and said, it is a good land which the Lord our God is about to give us. Yet you were not willing to go up, but rebelled against the command of the Lord your God. And you grumbled in your tents and said, because the Lord hates us, he has brought us out of the land of Egypt to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us. Where can we go up? Our brethren have made our hearts melt, saying, the people are bigger and taller than we. The cities are large and fortified to heaven. And besides, we saw the sons of Anakim there. Talking about the Nephilim, these were just very large people. Scary people, strong people, powerful people, whatever. When we get in this type of conflict, I think the real trick of the enemy is he gets us to be negative. The discouragement leads to grumbling and complaining, and the obstacles are too big. The dreams are still there. The promises of God are still there. We begin to focus on what we have to go through to get there. And it's very easy to become negative. And this is what's happening with them. And the more negative you become, what happens? The bigger the giants become, right? All of a sudden, you can't see the land flowing with milk and honey. All you can see is, oh, those giants. I mean, we can't get by that. Why did you bring us out of Egypt, God? Were you just teasing us here? It'd been better for us to stay back where we were. Well, stay back as slaves? No. But what was happening? Their perception was being distorted. They weren't seeing things correctly. Because they were looking at the giants, and they were made afraid. It affected their self-esteem. They lost confidence. Again, what is the answer? It's not about them developing confidence in what they can do against those giants, but it's about the relationship with the one that delivered them from Egypt, that parted the Red Sea miraculously for them. They forgot that God was with them. And God speaks to them and says, verse 29, then I said to them, do not be shocked nor fear them. The Lord your God who goes before you will himself fight on your behalf. When you get in this conflict with your own self-esteem, do you ever think about that? That God himself will fight on your behalf. God created you in his image. He cares about your self-esteem. He cares about the things you're looking at, those giants that are making you afraid and causing you to back away from your dreams and from the promised land and the promises that God has made to you. What do we need to be aware of in this conflict? What's wrong with me? I should be more spiritual. I should be able to fight these things. I should be able to pray harder. No, it's not about getting down on yourself. It's about saying, God, who are you to me? God didn't give the Israelites a word saying, okay, I want you to sneak out of Egypt, kind of slide through the wilderness, go take the land. He says, listen, stand still, he told Moses. Stand still and see the salvation of your God. God made it very clear to the Israelites that this wasn't something they were doing in their own strength. He said, it's impossible for you to do it in your own strength. Here's this Red Sea in front of you, and none of you can swim across it, and the Egyptians, you remember, were coming up on their rear, ready to attack them. God said, so you can know that I am with you and I'm fighting your battle. I'm going to part this sea, you're going to cross over, and they're going to drown in it. What was God trying to convey? I'm with you. Be in relationship with me. Be aware that I care about your battles. And the obstacles you see to your dreams, I'm there to fight those obstacles for you. Right after that verse, he says, and in the wilderness where you saw how the Lord your God carried you. Just as a man carries his son in all the way which you have walked until you came to this place. You see the relationship there? What God is trying to convey to them at this point is he's not just trying to give them an exhortation. Come on, guys, get with it. Let's go fight those giants. He's saying, remember. Remember I'm with you. Remember through all this time in the wilderness, I've carried you like a father carries his son. What is he talking about? Love. When a father loves his child, that father will carry his child. Now, we don't see our lives that way. And when you're going through battle, you probably feel all alone and isolated and nobody's carrying me here. I'm trying to crawl and somehow get through this battle. But the reality is, no matter how you feel or what's going on in your thinking, the love of God is carrying you. We just need to be aware of it. The key to spiritual warfare and overcoming in battles is not how hard we fight, it's our awareness. Zechariah, I believe, was a prophet that said, not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord of hosts. Being aware of the spirit that indwells us. One last verse, Ephesians chapter 6. This chapter deals with the armor of God, and we're not going to go into all what the armor is. But it says, Ephesians 6, verse 10, finally be strong in the Lord in the strength of his might. Put on the full armor of God, Ephesians 6, 11, that you may be able to stand firm against the schemes of the devil. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. Therefore, do you see what he's describing here? When we're in battle, what are you thinking about? When you get consumed with battle and you get negative, it's all about flesh and blood, right? It's all about what that person did to you, what they said to you, or what's wrong with me, why can't I do this or that? What Paul is saying is this conflict that you're in goes deeper than circumstances. It's about wickedness in heavenly places. It's about the fact that you're a child of God and this earth belongs to God. He's given a bigger picture. Now, what's he say to do about it? Okay, there's wickedness in heavenly places. This battle is much bigger than your circumstances. Now, you better pray harder to get through it. He says, verse 13, take up the full armor of God. Take up. He didn't say go out there and duke it out with all this wickedness or all the battle it out. I mean, where were you going to find it anyway? That's enough to drive someone crazy. He's saying, given this big battle you're in, put me on. What is the armor of God? It talks about the truth, breastplate of righteousness, peace, qualities of who God is. Jesus said, I am the truth, the way, and the life. Okay, what God is saying, given this battle that you're in, put me on. Clothe yourselves in God. In other words, be aware of God in your life and the relationship you have with him. It's not you personally trying to fight these things. It's you relating to your Creator and to your Father and the one that loves you. Colossians, what does it say? Put on love. I like that. Try to behave better. Try to love in a better way. No, put on love. It's like God is love. We just need to learn how to appropriate. To back away of trying to do things so much in our own strength. And learn how to let go and let God be more real to us. Putting on the armor of God, I think, is that worship. Being in his presence. Letting him be real to you. Engaging in that relationship you have with him, the intimacy. Revelation, Jesus said, behold, I stand at the door and knock. Just let me in. To me, that's what putting that armor on. Let him in. Let him feel you. Be aware of his presence that's in your life. And as we're aware that we're clothed in the presence of the Lord, the battle is God's. Whether it's the little conflicts we find ourselves in or the global conflicts that we're all a part of, it doesn't matter. The same God is Lord over your life and everything you face. He's Lord over this entire planet and everything this world is going through right now. Let's be aware of who we're positioned in. And then we'll find that, yes, we are going to battle in life, and no, we're not going to stop being human. So those battles will continue, but we'll be aware of God's victory being worked through those conflicts and battles. Why? Because we know who we're one with. And that love, that's a vital part of our life and awareness. Amen. Let's stand.